Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of the show today. And since we did the crossover in our first segment with Donnie and Dolly, let's wrap up the show today with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
You got something to say?
No, headlines draft?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to do another headlines draft. All right. Sure. Do you want? I got to go first yesterday, so you go first today.
Okay, let's start with
the
game.
I'll go first, thank you.
No, Dom, you will not. Let's start with the game. Canucks manhandle the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Win 4-2, finish 3-1-1.
You stole my pick.
On the road trip.
Yeah.
Solid, strong post All-Star trip. What did I say?
4-1-1.
3-1-1. And our 4 points clear at the top of the table.
The top of the table?
Top of the NHL standings.
Just start slowly.
He's got Champions League on.
I was going to say, a good bit for you would just be like slowly start integrating soccer.
Oh, I've already been doing it.
soccer jargon and seeing how long it takes people to notice.
Sorry, I've already been doing it. One of my favorite ones is...
shambolic defending from the Canucks.
One of my favorite ones is in Chinese soccer commentary. Okay, so this is super niche.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, if you massively kick a ball way over the net, like it just goes skyward, as sometimes happens in soccer, they call it a stir-fry aeroplane. Obviously, they call it something in Chinese, but the translation is stir-fry aeroplane. Mandarin, excuse me. Anyway, and I love that. Stir-fry aeroplane.
It's a great one.
I use that all the time when guys sky shots in the NHL. I think that should be common parlance. Also, another good one.
Brace.
In Italian soccer.
I like brace.
In Italian soccer. I like brace, too. In Italian soccer, when you hire a retread manager,
this should be good.
The loose translation is
sloppy seconds.
Cold, no, Dom.
Cold bowl of soup that doesn't please anybody. Yeah, it's good.
That's a good one. Shout out to the Italians. Yeah. They were cooking with that one.
Or not.
The NHL is really good at hiring cold bowls of soup that don't please anybody.
It's an NHL specialty. All right.
Okay, you had the game.
I had the game.
All right. I'm going to go. I mean, it's got to be Phil Kessel.
It's got
to
be Phil Kessel.
Phil Kessel has to be second.
Phil Kessel, I was
probably taking Phil Kessel first.
I thought about it, but I wanted to stay on task.
He's here. He's skating with Abbotsford. It's gone from, you know, keep an eye on where this goes to seeming potentially imminent. Although, as Rick Dhaliwal says, there's no guarantees that have been made. But obviously, major, major interest between the two sides. And I mean, look, here's the thing. Even if Phil Kessel does eventually sign and never is really more than like a bit player for the Canucks, and so it's not that impactful, it has given us such a volume of things to talk about and angles to take on this, and it generated so much interest. Like, you know what it actually kind of reminds me of? And this is a symbol, a signal of how far the Canucks have come from this time last year to right now. You know, last year, the kind of like late season surprise guest star of the season was Akito Hirose, NCAA free agent. And I remember all of a sudden it was like, so much Akito Hirose talk all the time. It's like he was the new star of this portion of the Canucks season. This year it could be Phil Kessel, three-time Stanley Cup champion. It's just a very different vibe, but that's what it's kind of been. So I think he has to be the second pick in a headlines draft here.
Yeah, no question. He's arrived in Vancouver. People are taking grainy cell phone photos. Uh-huh. It's a matter of like national hockey interest.
Mm-hmm.
This is a highly accomplished guy with a lengthy and complicated relationship with both the head coach and the general manager, and the president of hockey operations of this hockey club. Can he help? Can he not help? Should the club spend their cap space elsewhere? Is he a redundant fit? I mean, there's so many different angles to unpack. This is going to keep us talking for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Following his first practice in Abbotsford.
Plus, by the way, Phil Kessel, 8 points away from 1,000 on his career, which is another interesting thing. Like, we were talking about the drive for him to get back and play. Now, 8 points, even if he does sign and get back in the lineup, might be a tall order with what's remaining here, but that is an interesting another thing to note from Phil Kessel's perspective about his potential interest in joining the Canucks. Should we do another?
I've got another one.
Okay.
Unless you steal mine.
Well, I guess I get to go again.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with the third line.
Yeah, that's the right one.
The third line
dominating.
I've got
one more, though, so we'll...
Yeah, I have another one as well. But the third line, You know, we talked about it.
So do I. I'm just kidding. I don't care.
Brag. You think you're the only one who can draft headlines? I got news for you, pal. Look, they are a huge part of this Canucks season, of the story of this Canucks season. I said it earlier in the show. If they were just playing like, maybe I said it off air even, but if they were just playing like an above average third line, as opposed to, and this is dead serious, like their results together in terms of the process and all that, legitimately among the best lines in hockey. It's like not even hyperbole. It is right up there with some of the best. I'm not saying they're the best, but like top 15-ish, I don't think is out of the question with the way they've performed, especially over the last couple of months. We're having a very different conversation. Not that the season's a disaster without that or anything, but like that's been a huge driver of the reason the Canucks are, as you say, 4 points clear at the top of the table, in the position to win the Pacific. All of those things, yeah, you need Thatcher Demko, you need Quinn Hughes, you need Elias Pettersson and JT Miller and what they're doing, but the fact that this line has been so good, so consistent, is a massive, massive part of why the Canucks are where they are.
Yeah, well, they're absolutely a key driver of this team's 5-on-5 success. They are this team's best line. They are being used as at a second line clip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a top six line. We call it the third line because of when they take line rushes and because Pettersson nor JT Miller are on it.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of usage, you know, this team's using this line like a second line. Like, they are highly involved. They are driving play unlike any other Canucks line, and there's bottom line there. In terms of their case to be the best line in hockey.
I didn't say that. I said Okay. Among the best. I didn't say they were the best line in hockey.
Okay.
Let's not go overboard.
Because I don't think there's a case.
No, I don't think there is.
I think it's Hyman, McDavid, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Don't try to put that on me.
And then I think it's Tkachuk, Bennett, and Verhaeghe. And then I'm open to thinking about it.
All right. Wow.
No, I'm not going that far, but you know. Anyway, they were great. Last one, Noah Juulsen. Which is just
okay.
Headline: Noah Juulsen. Shout out to Noah Juulsen, killing it. I don't see any way this team can remove him from the lineup. That's an incredible rise, given like his performance in that Philadelphia game, given where he was last season, where he was earlier in the season. We'd seen flashes before.
I mean, they went out, not that it was the only reason, but I mean, they went out and got Mark Friedman, like in part because like, hey, we needed somebody else to put in the lineup. You know what I mean? Over Noah Juulsen.
I think it's fair to say that Akito Hirose and Noah Juulsen sort of like helped keep the Edmonton Oilers in that second game of the year. It was not good enough at the bottom pair. I think that's why they went and got Friedman, especially because Soucy was still out, right? But yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know how you take him out of the lineup right now. He's playing so well.
Do you have anything to add in the broadsheet? Because that, your point there and what I was going to draft kind of goes right into lineup notes as well. I mean, I guess the only thing worth mentioning, I know you've made the joke like, hey, they're working the phones and looking to add on defense if they can. But just as Rick Dhaliwal mentioned when we were talking to him, they're still very active here. They're still very active, and it does still feel like there are more shoes to drop before the March 8th trade deadline, which is great news since we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage here on Sportsnet 650. But I think that's the key thing to keep in mind is this is probably not a finished product yet for the Canucks.
You read anything into – just a question, and then we'll move on from the broadsheet. You read anything into the complete lack of Pettersson updates?
Pettersson update?
Post-All-Star break.
Ah.
Is it good news? Is it no news? Is it?
I'm going to say.
What do you read into the absence of information? Speculate freely.
I'm going to say it's no news.
Yeah,
I think very tempted to say it's good news. I think you and I have talked about this in the past, where sometimes things go silent or things seem a little, maybe even bad before a deal eventually gets done.
Sometimes sides throw one last run of elbows.
So could you make the fact pattern that we've seen with Elias Pettersson, the Canucks, fit that? Yeah, you probably could. But I also wonder if it's just as simple as there was that flurry of conversation and commentary, not conversation between the two sides, but commentary from the Canucks about how much they'd like to get it done in January. They kind of, okay, they've said their piece, and now it's status quo. That's my read with zero inside information whatsoever. Could be something else, but that's how I'm looking at it.
Fingers crossed.
We will see. We will see where it goes.
Do you like how I let you speculate and then quickly withdrew?
Decided not to speculate. But see, I'm not an insider, so I have the I say that you are. I have the freedom of speculation, and nobody's like, "Ooh, what does he actually mean by this?" They're like, "No, he's just talking. Just saying nonsense," which I enjoy doing. Lineup notes. So you mentioned Noah Juulsen. How do you take him out of the lineup? Nikita Zadorov eligible to return on Thursday against the Red Wings. Now, he will get into the lineup because they're still playing Mark Friedman, of course, so that won't actually have to be a decision made there. But once Carson Soucy is healthy and, you know, assuming everyone's still here and no one's been traded, that no one else is injured, that will end up being a decision they have to make. And I think, you know, typically this Canucks coaching staff gives you a very, very clear idea of kind of how they rate their players and who they're most confident in based on the ice time. And we were talking earlier in the week about the ice time of Noah Juulsen and Nikita Zadorov starting to kind of meet in the middle. Zadorov's trending down, Noah Juulsen's trending up. And as we get closer to that eventual decision, I think it's going to be worth really keeping an eye on those two numbers. How much is Noah Juulsen playing? How much is Nikita Zadorov? Because that's going to tell you a lot about where that situation is going.
Well, and how well does the penalty kill continue to perform?
Yeah.
Right, and how much of that is attributed to Noah Juulsen? How indispensable does he become in the club's estimation?
Yeah, that's a good one. The other thing I was going to say in the headlines was Nils Höglander scores again. This time playing
three
with
straight.
Elias Pettersson and Elias Lindholm on the all-Swedish line, getting another look in the top six. And with Ilya Mikheyev's demotion to the bottom six and where his minutes have trended, with Rick Tocchet openly speaking about, hey, there's spots open in the top six, guys have a chance to audition. And, you know, it's obviously never just been about offensive production with Nils Höglander. We know there's been questions about the other facets of his game from not just this coach, but his other coaches in his NHL career too. But given the flux elsewhere and the kind of search for answers in the top six, if he's doing these types of things, if he's clicking with Elias Pettersson, if he's scoring consistently, I mean, he pretty much has to be a top six fixture now. Like, I don't see the other option where you're like, no. We're sorry, Nils, you know, you're producing, but we're going to try this guy over you in the top six. Like, I think the leash has got to be pretty significant at this point for Nils Höglander.
Well, it hasn't been.
It hasn't been in the past, but I'm saying it should be now going on.
Well, also
for going forward.
Can we get this guy on the power play?
Yeah.
Like, how much longer do we have to pretend that's not absolutely essential given, you know, I mean, what? They've had, like, Sam Lafferty in the bumper. They've had Ilya Mikheyev on the half wall. Like, you know, this guy's producing constantly in limited minutes. And having seen the club scale up that role, he's proved equal to the task.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's time to keep going, in my view.
And I know Irfan Ghafar was on Canucks Central last night saying, like, hey, Elias Pettersson really likes playing with Nils Höglander, right? So if there's chemistry there, and then it clicks with Elias Lindholm as well. Like, it seems like a pretty good option to be that guy that comes in and compliments two of your top players. I think he has that skill set. And we'll see. Maybe there isn't that trust to earn that spot. But at least in the here and now, with the way the roster is set up at the time, I think this should be Nils Höglander's spot to run with. I also did want to note, I thought it was interesting that Rick Tocchet spoke after the game and kind of acknowledged, you know, he's shifted Lindholm around a lot already in his short tenure with the Canucks, and maybe it's time to kind of get him in a groove and a rhythm in a familiar spot. I would expect we see that again tomorrow against Detroit, and I agree with Tocchet that I think it's time to give that setup a look here.
Yep.
All right. Anything else in the lineup notes that you want to add?
Nope.
All right, playoff forecast. So this is, I actually think this is really interesting. As interesting as a 3% bump in the Canucks' chances to win the division can be. So they win last night, of course. They beat Chicago 4-2. Edmonton also wins. And of course, Edmonton, the team with the second best chances per Dom's model to win the Pacific. Despite them both winning, the Canucks' division chances go from 71% to 74%.
Every game.
Edmonton's running out of runway, man.
I think more than that. The Canucks are running out, the ability, the runway for the Oilers to out-accumulate the Canucks, especially given the lack of head-to-heads between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's just out of their control.
So
and
they're at a point now where holding serve is like a significant win for them.
I'd add this too. Like, we know that Vancouver's underlying form has ticked up since January. it hasn't been like all meteoric, right? Like very much they had like this spike in the first half of the month of January through the New York stage of the trip. And then it kind of slid back down still to a higher point than it was in the fall, but not like the promise of what we saw in mid-January. Yep. But last night they completely flattened.
The Blackhawks.
Blackhawks team. So A, that's going to juice some of the underlying stuff that the model reacts to. And two, the more this team wins, the more the model's going to buy in. Like, what are their Stanley Cup odds? Are those moving?
Oh, let me check from five, really quickly.
It's been
they're still not 5% still. They've been kind of 4 or 5 for most of the time.
Because to me, that's the number. Like,
yep.
The model's not going to adjust that number until it begins to view the Canucks as, like, equal in talent to the Oilers. Like, the Oilers are what are holding that number down. The model believes in the Oilers as the best team in hockey in a way that restrains Vancouver's cup odds. That, to me, is going to be the number to track over the balance of the season.
Yeah, but I do think it's striking now just the degree to which, as I said, holding serve in the race for the division is actually a massive win for the Canucks as the number of games continues to tick down. Right now, the Oilers are on pace for about 106 points. Of course, that's taking their entire season into account, right? The dismal start, but also the 16 wins in a row. They're on pace for about 106 points. The Canucks get to 106 just by going 500 the rest of the way, right? So not that Edmonton can't go above that. They're really, really good. You'd expect them probably to eclipse that number, but the Canucks don't have to do a whole lot to get to, you know, 110, 111, something like that. And that's the point where it becomes really, really difficult for Edmonton to catch up with them. So I thought that was very, very notable. I also, this isn't really playoff. Well, it is playoff forecast related for the Canucks. LA Kings following up a big win over the Edmonton Oilers, getting blown out 7-0 by the Buffalo Sabres last night. And, you know, they're still, the model still really, really likes LA because of their underlying numbers to make the playoffs, right? They still have an 85% chance to make the playoffs, and the rest of the Western Conference just can't get their act together to really put pressure on them either. It's just interesting, though. Like, where is this going with the LA Kings? They've already made the coaching change. You're still having results like that. And as it becomes more and more likely that the Canucks could be matched up with LA if they finish in that wild card spot or one of the two wild card spots, like, it's really worth monitoring. And, man, that was one that I know raised eyebrows around the league last night. 7-0 to the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, unreal. I mean, I'm still holding. I just want to note this. I'm still holding, but... That was ugly.
It was not a good performance. And Seattle won, so your Kraken won last night. But dismal performance elsewhere for the Western Conference would be playoff contenders.
And interestingly, it seems like a trend of late.
That like one team wins and everyone else loses?
Well, no, that the East is overpowering.
Oh, yeah.
It's just something to monitor.
Gambling update.
Yep. Odds are open for Red Wings versus Canucks. I actually think the total's more interesting than the side here. 6.5, set at 6.5 with like plus money, like plus 110, plus 105. 110's the consensus on the under.
Oh, interesting.
So the market expects a lot of goals between the Vancouver Canucks and the Detroit Red Wings. I understand why, but that seems a little overheated.
We need to get Play Now to price out like a Canucks player does the gritty props and things like that. Jake Walman over or under 5 minutes penalties in
That'd
the game.
That'd be fun.
Something like that. So those are the numbers we really need.
Canucks, by the way, are minus 180 to minus 165, depending on where you look. Home favorites, Detroit Red Wings, plus 150 consensus. Road dogs.
That's the whiteboard for today, February 14th, Valentine's Day, the Valentine's Day edition of the whiteboard here on Canucks Talk. Final few minutes of the show. And of course, the game against Detroit, the rematch from earlier in the weekend, first of a mini two-game homestand, but they do have a run. And you were mentioning this a little bit earlier in the show here as well. They've got a run of a lot of really, really interesting games coming up, starting with their first meeting with the Winnipeg Jets of the season at home on Saturday, hockey night, all of that, you know, two Western Canadian teams, that's going to be a good one. But then you look at it next week. They go on the road in Colorado. They come back. They host Boston. They'll be looking for revenge after that one. Pittsburgh, Jim Rutherford and Rick Tocchet and everyone's old team on this team. LA for the first meeting. And then you get into March where, you know, they're at home for a long time. this is going to be, or should be, a really fun stretch of Canucks hockey coming up with a lot of marquee matchups. And, you know, a lot of matchups that could have relevance for what we see in the first round of the playoffs, right? Like whether it's, you know, trying to duel Winnipeg for finishing first place in the conference, a potential preview with LA. Like it feels like we're going to get a chance to gather a lot of information about how this team stacks up and what their road to the playoffs might look like here in the next few weeks.
Mm. Yeah, we are. And also it's just going to be fun. Like these are,
hopefully
these are, well, no, but it's going to be fun either way. What do you mean?
No, I mean, I hope they're good games. Like we were hyped about the game at Boston, but that wasn't fun. Because it just wasn't a good game. It's not even like because they lost 4-0. It's just like, oh, this is a flat, boring game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That
so
was,
I hope
this was over in 22
exactly.
minutes.
Exactly. It was like, oh, that was a dud. That was anticlimactic. I hope it's not that. I hope they're really good at fighting, you know,
well,
exciting games.
I think they will be. I think it's going to be a ton of fun to watch this team down the stretch and see how they measure up against a bunch of, like, their peer-level teams who they just haven't played yet.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, Winnipeg, LA, like.
I think by the time they play LA, that'll be, like, the last team they haven't faced in the league, which is just wild.
Feels like it, yeah.
It wild for it to be a divisional opponent.
And well, even the teams they have, like, you know, they played Vegas and Colorado during a relative fallow period in their season. You know, how did they measure up now? Is it different now? Can they, you know, because we didn't expect them to win those games. They weren't favored in those games. Like, it was totally different than it will be this time around. I mean, how do they stack up? That to me is fascinating.
The flip side of that, and we have to wait a little bit. We don't get it till the third to last game of the season.
Game 80, baby.
Is going to be Edmonton,
right? No,
where it's
like
we're seeing a completely different Edmonton Oilers team. Well, we think we will be by that point, seeing a completely different Edmonton Oilers team from what the Canucks, you know, multiple times frustrated and embarrassed early on in the season. So that one's going to be fascinating to watch again when we get there. Chris and Duncan texted in, what dance would you want to see a Canucks player do after a game-winning goal versus the Red Wings? We talked about this with Donnie and Dolly. Break out the John Travolta. Saturday Night Fever.
Easy.
It'd be fantastic.
I would like to see someone do the ducky.
What's with you and the Dougie, Dom?
I'm a millennial. That's the.
I'm kind of with that, too. That's
the song of our generation.
Like the John Wall intro?
Yeah.
It'd be sweet.
Yeah,
I think really any dance.
You know what?
Actually,
no,
would be pretty awesome.
I would like to see a hockey player crip walk on ice.
Very, very seriously, though, this Canucks team, they don't overly celebrate. You know what I mean? Like the ethos, the day by day ethos of this team is in conflict with that kind of celebration.
The most in character thing they could do would be win like 4-0 and not rub it in or any way. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just be like, yeah, we win. We're better than you. Bye. We don't play you again. See ya.
And by the way, that's like super dismissive and I'm here for it.
100%. I don't think that would be like a bad thing. I think that'd be a good thing. That's leaning into your character, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's as fun. Like the thing about the gritty is we should have more over the top hockey celebrations.
Yes. Yes.
I just love that Jake Walman has forced an entire like sports media contingent to discuss the gritty for like multiple days now.
Well, and you know, Ridly Greig, like next time fall down and do the pool cue into the net. Like let's amp up the stakes for disrespectful empty netters and over the top celebrations. I mean,
by the way, we need clarity on this guy's name. Cause I've heard 90% of the hockey community call him Greg. The pronunciation guide says Greig.
Have you checked Hockey Reference?
That's where Greig is.
What do they say? What we need to do is, this is what I used to do, is find out what the Ottawa home Greig play-by-play people call him.
Yeah, oh, no, that's for sure the way to do it. Have you seen Dakota Joshua's Hockey Reference pronunciation guide, by the way?
It?
It's like Dakota, and then it's Josh, spelled J-A-W-S-H, and then O-O-O-A, Joshua.
Oh, that's how I say it. Finally.
I'm sorry. I was just like checking out Dakota Joshua's career stats the other day and I was like, Dakota Joshua. And it's like the pronunciation guide somehow makes it more complicated.
I'm just picturing
way more
Thomas,
complicated.
Thomas is sitting alone in his apartment or home or whatever he owns.
Oh, 100%.
And he's just saying it out loud to himself. His wife is in the room, next room, like, Thomas, you okay?
it's unbelievable. It's like somehow they gave him a droid name from Star Wars. Anyway,
we gotta go. We're way over time here. We'll wrap it up. Game day tomorrow. We're back on the air here on Sportsnet 650.